Support for WVIK comes from Kathleen Collins at the Dragonfly in Bettendorf. Using both conventional and alternative counseling methods for empowerment to help create change for individuals and couples. More information is at KathleenCollinsCounseling.com.
Everyone, and welcome back to the Heartland Politics Show and podcast, which is aired on and distributed by WVIK, Quad Cities NPR. WVIK is the flagship public radio station in the Quad Cities region of northwestern Illinois and eastern Iowa. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and today the focus of Heartland Politics is on the state of higher education in Iowa. There are few people in state government better qualified to examine this topic than my guest today. He's State Representative Taylor Collins from just down the road in Mediapolis, Iowa. Taylor serves the 95th House District and was first elected in 2022. Most importantly, he serves as the House Higher Education Chair and sits on the House Appropriations and Government Oversight Committees. I add that because serving on all three would certainly work together nicely in government reform initiatives. Taylor, thanks so much for coming back on Heartland Politics.
Robin, it's always great to be with you.
You know, I remember our last visit where you were just taking over the committee and outlined your priorities. So I thought it would be a good time to have you back. We got through the legislative session to see where things stand. Very important issue for the future of Iowa. What actions have been taken to fulfill kind of your agenda when you first started?
Well, yeah, I think, Robin, when we talked, I didn't really know how successful we were going to be. I didn't know, how willing of a dance partner we were going to have in the Senate. And I didn't honestly know if we were going to have willing partners at the Board of Regents, the community colleges, and what all really that was going to look like. And looking back now, I'm really proud of the actions that we take. We not only refocused our higher education system back to workforce-oriented education, we're also working on making sure that we're restoring that true liberal arts education. We did a lot of good first steps this year. I constantly point out to my Democratic colleagues, they talk a lot about diversity, but very little do they talk about intellectual diversity. And I believe that's greatly lacking on our college campuses. I hear it from my constituents, parents, many folks, specifically those that are going to our state universities, which is unacceptable because those are taxpayer-funded institutions. And so, really the crowning achievement, I think, of this session was the Center for Intellectual Freedom. We established that at the University of Iowa, our flagship institution, really not only prioritizing civics education, again, going back to that true liberal arts education, but we're going to finally start introducing some intellectual diversity in our college campuses. Because if we want to make sure we have well-rounded students who are educated about our Democratic Republic, we got to make sure that they're exposed to all points of view, and it's not enough just to expose them to only one side of the issue.
I would imagine that there are people out there that are a little surprised hearing that there wasn't intellectual diversity before. I know in the class I teach, listeners know that I present both sides. I think it's important for students to hear both sides as long as they're respectful to others. There obviously were problems there that came to your attention that were to address.
Yeah, and Rob, you look at the data, and it's not every faculty member, it's not even every institution. Some folks are doing it right. But specifically, Professor Luciano DiCastro, an economist in the Tippie College of Business at the at the University of Iowa came to my committee this year and presented on some data in higher education. And it looks to be like 11 to 1, 11 to 1 left-leaning faculty to conservative faculty. Some of that's because many conservative faculty don't self-identify out of fear. They concern themselves with basically being pushed around on campus, not making it through the tenure review process, maybe even not even having their contract extended. And as we sit here today, Luciano, who presented at that committee, he has actually been appointed the interim director of that center as of 2 days ago. So we're moving very quickly. And in addition to that, I was actually just at the University of Northern Iowa yesterday, getting an update from their new center's director for civic education. And in addition to that, we also have a center being set up at Iowa State as well. So this is not just a picking even on one university. This is a comprehensive approach of prioritizing civics education and really making sure that we're prioritizing a balanced viewpoint and approach when it comes to teaching students about some of these very controversial topics.
Is there anything you can say to people, maybe parents or people out there that are fear that this is going to go the opposite way, that this is all going to be slanted in a more conservative direction?
I don't think so, Rob. I mean, the reality is, even when I think we introduce some of these concepts and ideas that we're moving forward with, the reality is still the number of people going into higher education overall, it's still going to be slanted to the left. All we're asking for as a caucus and as House Republicans is just a little bit more balance. 11 to 1 is not appropriate, and I know for a fact that we can do better than that.
Be anxious to follow up with you in the years to come to see how this does. It certainly sounds non-threatening, and as again, someone who teaches political science, it's not that hard. but anyway, I'll let you be the judge of that in Iowa, you and your colleagues. I see you also tackled the topic of affordability. That's a huge issue right now where, a lot of people choose college as a pathway to the American dream. We'll talk about the other pathway in a minute, but it's getting priced out. What were you able to do on that?
Yeah, so really another, I would say, second tier bill that I'm most proud of that got signed in a lot by Governor Reynolds here just a few months ago. Was the College Affordability Act. And I would have loved to go even further than this. So this took a little bit of negotiations with our folks at the Regents Office as well as the Senate. But what this bill does is it not only requires tuition rates for each academic year to be set really before those students start enrolling, because those tuition rates were set midsummer after students were already enrolled. So it was almost an issue of consumer protection for many students. But we're also looking at new ways we can make sure that we're getting folks into the workforce faster, or utilizing that high demand we have for a workforce in the Midwest to drive down the cost of higher education. So for example, we directed the provost in this bill to make sure that each university is offering at least one work-study program. And really, they need to do more than that. This is just the bare minimum. And what that does is allow students to not only make sure they have a job at the end of graduation, the moment they walk off the stage of graduation, they know they're going to find full-time employment. But throughout that process in their education, they're getting their education paid for by that employer. And we are in such a demand for workers at this point, Robin, that specifically nursing, I give a lot of credit to our community college down here in Burlington. They've been doing this for quite a few years now. The hospital, their hospital through their foundation, will actually pay for all of the tuition expenses for these nursing students if they agree to work there following graduation. And our university should be doing the exact same thing. We know there's companies that are out there asking for this. We know there's the need. It's just a matter of will and really being willing to change the process. The second thing was looking at three-year degree options. The Higher Learning Commission has finally issued guidance on what that will look like to accredit three-year degree programs. And this just makes sure that our region institutions are adapting and just providing students options. Many students will want to have the four-year experience focused on those 30-some credit hours of liberal arts. And there's a lot of a value to that. But the fact is if we're in such a demand for workers and employment, we just got to make sure we're providing options. And if folks want to shave off that year of education, time and expense and lost wages, we should be really leaving that to them. And something we'll be getting a report back on in November this year is a feasibility study that the board office will be conducting on a tuition guarantee program. And what that does is when a student enters college as a freshman, they will have their tuition rate locked in through those 4 years. The obviously, the university is pushing back because this is lost revenue. But I don't think it's fair to those students to constantly have tuition skyrocket throughout that process. But luckily, probably the biggest achievement, and this was not actually in the bill, this is just in a negotiation with the board office and changing Board of Regents policy, was we got them to not only change their policy on tuition increases, basically increasing as much as you possibly can to match the inflation rate. And what they are doing now is they cannot exceed a three-year rolling average of the higher education price index. So for this year, for example, I believe it's about 3.8%. And that's a little bit elevated because obviously we had some pretty significant inflation just a few years ago, starting to come down now. But you know, you look back, Robin, to 10, 15 years ago, specifically under the Vilsack administration, we had year over year double-digit increases in our tuition at our state universities. And that is not sustainable. And more importantly, it's not fair to students who are enrolled. Maybe they're a sophomore or freshman. They have multiple years of education. But how in the heck do you budget for your college education when you're seeing double-digit increases annually?
Was that, Taylor, did your committee do some research or was there information available? Because I had seen stories, again, just being middle of the road here and just asking a question. I had seen stories where a lot of the increases were going to fund administrative positions and not plowed back into instruction. Is that a fair statement?
Oh, that's absolutely fair. We've seen that trend really over the last few decades. In fact, one of the things I think folks admire most about how we operated this year is we didn't just roll out bills and really steamroll the process. We brought in national experts from around the country. One of the presentations we brought in was an independent person who looks at the expenditures of our universities and really looks at where that spending is going to. And you're exactly right. Administrators, they're bloated right now. I will say there are some universities that are holding the line, some that aren't. Specifically at the University of Iowa and Iowa State, I believe it's too high right now, simply. You know, University of Northern Iowa, they've had enrollment challenges in the past decade, so they've obviously held spending under control to a significant extent, and they've really been forced to. But for those universities that haven't had the to really go through that exercise, it is the natural tendency to increase administrative expenses.
I know you were outspoken about the DEI staff positions, diversity, equity, inclusion, and the Trump administration came down with some policies as well at the federal level. How has that been? What's happened in Iowa universities as a result of what's happened both federally and in the state?
Well, Iowa was one of the first states to take action on this, and really it began to start going in this direction when I highlighted simply the salaries of these administrators clear back in 2023, my first year in the legislature. We had DEI vice presidents making over $250,000 a year, and the anger even from some of my Democratic colleagues was surprising on that. And so we started going down that path. We have eliminated the offices. They have been shut down. The next step really now is dealing with the DEI core course requirements. And that's very frustrating for me as a taxpayer to know that we were requiring students, even some student who may be going into something like a science and accounting, something like that, not even the liberal arts, where they're required to take these courses. But beyond that, you know, we do not have still in code or in the board policy or at any of our region universities, all three, 3 credit hours of civics education, 3 credit hours of American history. And my message to the college president has been very clear. If they have time for 3 credit hours of DEI coursework, they can certainly find time to make sure we have 3 credit hours of American history or civics education.
You're listening to Heartland Politics on WVIK Quad Cities NPR. I'm your host, Robin Johnson, and my guest today is State Representative Taylor Collins, who represents the 95th District in Iowa, just down the road here in the Minneapolis-Burlington area. Taylor was first elected in 2022, and he's chair of the State Higher Education Committee. And from that perch, he's been able to enact a lot of his agenda, the Republicans' agenda on higher ed policy. We've been talking about that a little bit. Let me ask you this. I'm a big believer in liberal arts, but I understand what the trend's going on right now where students and parents are looking for a return on their investment. And I get that. I've heard you mention liberal arts a couple times. How do we proper balance the career-centered education with you know, a balance or a foundation of liberal arts, which again, I still feel is important for critical thinking skills.
That's what I think is so interesting about this debate, Robin, is I not only feel like on two fronts, really, we've failed when it comes to higher education in the last few decades. Number one, I don't feel like many of our institutions have stepped up when it comes to preparing our workforce. I think one exception to that is probably the community colleges. They've been very willing to adapt, and they've kind of had to as a result of where they're located. They're operating in rural areas. But the second thing is I really feel like we've failed on the front of true liberal arts education. And you see that first and foremost with the level of civic literacy among graduates, not only at the high school level, but the college level. And so I think it's a balance. You know, we got to make sure that even if maybe you're an accounting major, even if you're going to engineering, you know, that one course on American history or civics, and building on top of the reforms we did to K through 12 social studies standards, I think that's critically important. And then at the same time, you just have to offer pathways, right? Leave it up to students and parents and see which direction they want to go. But it's my belief that we need to work on both ends, because it seems like right now we've drifted from the core mission on both.
You know, I saw the one word pop up a lot in some of your accomplishments, and that's transparency. This went beyond just actions taken by the legislature to some of the actions taken by the Board of Regents. Can you kind of summarize some of those for our listeners?
Well, these were very reasonable requests, Robin. I don't feel like we were asking a lot when we rolled out these bills. And I think that's why you quickly saw that the board office said, you know what, go ahead and save your time and resources. We'll go ahead and just adopt this as board policy. And so the Board of Regents agreed to move forward with policy. And this has already been adopted, making sure that all course syllabi is posted online. This is not only a method of making sure that there's some more regular oversight when it comes to what we're focusing on, but also just simply students when they're enrolling in classes. It would be nice to know exactly what's going on in those classes before you sign up for them. And also when it comes to university finances, you know, this comes on the heels, Robin, 2 days ago, the Board of Regents met and they approved their annualized budgets. Their budget to the board office is about the size of the state budget, folks need to understand. And they didn't even have actuals of the budget that they were approving. Yet they're approving $9 billion in spending. And so there's still a lot of work to do, but they're going to be required now to post more of that information online. And then some concerns that I heard from constituents was the amount of foreign funding going to higher education. And this will also require them to post online and mirror some of the federal standards that they already have to report when it comes to the level of foreign funding they receive from some foreign governments.
There was also a proposal on capping tuition. Has that been taken? Has that action been taken? Is that now in effect?
So that was originally in the College Affordability Act. And through conversations with the Senate, the board office, I came to the conclusion that we weren't be able to get it across the finish line. And that's when I pivoted to say, okay, if we're not going to move forward with this, you are going to adopt a cap in the actual board office through Board of Regents policy. And that's where we landed on capping it at a 3-year rolling average of the higher education price index. So certainly would have wanted to do that hard 3% that I would have wanted to do in the original bill. But the adjusting for inflation was something that I just couldn't get across the finish line. And I understand the concerns, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure every inflationary pressure should be passed on to consumers, taxpayers, and my constituents.
You seen any information? I want to bring another issue that's in the news a lot, kind of combining immigration policy with higher education policy. The United States has always attracted a lot of foreign students. They've gone on to great careers, become doctors, et cetera, engineers. But, you know, they also pay the full freight in most cases, which is why colleges like them a lot. Based on some of the crackdown on illegal immigration at the federal level, have you seen any evidence yet that students are staying away from IR, or do you still see plenty of foreign students coming here?
You know, it's hard to say, Robin, because the numbers plummeted so much during COVID. So it's hard to see what exactly that normalized number is going to be here in the future. When it comes to foreign students enrolling in our institutions, my biggest concern, honestly, is that we are educating our geopolitical adversaries. I have a lot of concern with really putting our best and brightest ideas, giving those ideas back to, for example, the People's Republic of China. I understand them paying full freight, and you're exactly right. The universities love that. They make a lot of money off of these foreign students. But that is my biggest concern long term, Robin, is that we are really educating our geopolitical adversaries on the national stage.
So your work's not done. I know you probably got plenty of ideas for the next session coming up next year. What are some of those? Walk through some of those and their impact, why they should be important to the average Iowan out there listening in.
Well, we'll get quite a bit of reports back in November here that we can really take and turn into bill form. One of those is the academic program review. I required the board, and they took up actually on their own, a review of all academic programs throughout our region universities to make sure they align with the workforce needs of the state. Very concerning when you see some programs that gender studies, whatever it may be, we've all seen the headlines, taxpayers don't want to pay for it. And oftentimes those are programs that have less than 10 students enrolled, and the universities oftentimes don't have the political will to deal with them. So I hope the board office deals with that on their own, and that my committee doesn't have to pick it up. We'll also be getting that tuition guarantee study back. But most importantly, I think the biggest thing we'll be working on next year is community college bachelor degrees. And I know you guys have been looking at that across the river as well. You know, I come from a very rural district, Robin. We really are in kind of a higher education desert in Southeast Iowa, and Western Iowa is really in the same position. And as we have employers that need to upskill their workforce, as we're needing more nurses, more folks who need not beyond the community college and associate's level degree, we need to make sure that we're adapting and being flexible. So this year during session, one of the first things I did was I charged our community college association through a request to all of our community college presidents and trustees. You know, I asked them to take up the task of getting back to my committee a report on how we feasibly do that. And what is the feasibility of doing that? Is there a demand for it? I believe there is, and the preliminary report they gave us just a few months ago here in May says that as well. But can we, as a rural communities, provide ourselves some more flexibility and give our workforce and employers in these regions a little bit more of a leg up when it comes to workforce training? Just offering bachelors of applied sciences, maybe even 3-year bachelor degrees, something just give us a little bit of a leg up when it comes to workforce training in rural Iowa.
The concern of 4-year colleges, which I've heard over here on this side of the river with the debate going on, they're concerned that the community college will just cannibalize their admissions and create pressure on the 4-year colleges as well, which may not be something that everybody wants. Are those discussions taking place there? Are there any ways to minimize the impact on the 4-year schools?
This certainly would be interesting to see what the association comes back with, because those are the things that they're really diving into. And I think that in the past, the community colleges really wanted to do this, but they didn't want to upset the apple cart. They didn't really want to get picked on by the big guys, specifically when it comes to disrupting their articulation agreements they have with those schools, because that's a very valuable tool for them. I think there really could be a couple different approaches, Robin. Going down the path of only Bachelor of Applied Sciences, you know, obviously we don't want our community colleges to be offering really liberal arts degrees. That's not their role. That's not what they're designed to be. But they were designed to be the workforce engines that we need. And so I think the method that they may take, for example, could be allowing our very rural community colleges, those that are over an hour from a private college, from a regional university, for example, down here in Burlington or over there in Council Bluffs. Really, the only folks I believe we're going to cannibalize in some of these areas are from the state of Illinois, the state of Nebraska, the state of South Dakota. Because you look at some of these institutions, particularly in Illinois, where tuition is far above even our flagship institutions. And I believe that really it can also serve as an economic development tool in attracting more of a population from the state of Illinois.
You're going to have a lot going on, and there's a lot of data coming back. And so I'll just, you know, share with our listeners, a lot of this is still in motion, and it's going to depend on the data coming back. Are there other things coming in that you're going to be watching for in your position as higher ed chair?
You know, Robin, you never know what can pop up over the next few months here. We were dealing with just an issue yesterday with some compliance issues at the University of Iowa and some of the chaos there. It's a very vulnerable environment now. Americans really are not satisfied with the state of higher education. That's one of the reasons why the speaker created this committee. But one other thing we'll be looking at, and I kind of alluded to this, I believe as taxpayers, it's not unreasonable for us to codify 3 to 6 credit hours of American history or American civics for our undergraduate students. And I think we also need to be looking at, and this is a big piece of higher education in some states, and that is our healthcare system. I don't want to head down a path of we have a singular healthcare system, the University of Iowa Healthcare. We cannot have a taxpayer-funded state institution competing against and really cannibalizing private institutions. That's not their role. And so we have to be very careful there as we head down that path. And I'll be watching the board office to see the action they take on this DEI and CRT course policy. You know, if a student wants to take those courses, I guess go ahead, but it is ridiculous that we require it. For example, an accounting student, an engineering student, whatever it may be. And so those will be some of the things we'll be watching here over the interim.
Excuse me, I've just got about a minute or two left just to sum up. What's the end goal of all this action? How in 5 or 10 years, Taylor, excuse me, if you look back, how will you know you've succeeded? What are the big performance measures?
I think one of the biggest ones is simply confidence in the system. When my first opening comments on our first committee meeting, and by the way, this is the first time there was a higher education committee in over 50 years. So people were paying attention. They knew we were going to be laser focused on this. Our confidence in the higher education system had plummeted to only 36%, according to Gallup. This year, I actually was asked for a comment recently, just a few weeks ago, about how higher education confidence for the first time in 10 years had actually increased. And I believe that's a result of people knowing that there is reforms taking place. And so ultimately, my goal is to return the confidence that we have in our institutions, make sure that our workforce, our employers, feel like they're getting served properly, and ultimately positive feedback from my constituents. You know, I've heard these concerns for years now, and it finally took a legislature and really Speaker Grassley putting the pressure on to be willing to take up some of these issues, because they're not easy. They're certainly not something that's fun to deal with, some of these issues in the bureaucracy, but it is very necessary.
State Representative Taylor Collins from Mediapolis has been our guest today on Heartland Politics. I thank you very much, Taylor, for taking the time. I know our congratulations on being a new father. I know you're very tired and busy, but I do appreciate you sharing your thoughts today with our listeners.
It's about my fourth job now, Robin, but that's okay. It's probably my most important one now. Thanks for having me on again.
And thanks to all our listeners for tuning in.
You've been listening to Heartland Politics with Robin Johnson, a presentation of WVIK, Quad Cities, NPR. You can follow Heartland Politics at WVIK.org or wherever you subscribe to podcasts.